Welcome to the West Harland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnaston, and this is episode 20.
Today this could be the greatest day of our lives. Before it all ends, before we run out of time.
It's now Monday, the 4th of June. And the race is now just over 2.5 weeks away and getting very, very close for those taking part and for everyone else as well. And I do wish everyone who's tapering and getting ready for the race all the best. Sadly, we've had a few people dropping out over the past week or two. The final numbers will be posted on the website, westharlandwayrace.org, sometime in the next week or so with race numbers. Hopefully there's a few people that will be able to come into the race as well, and we're hoping that it will be somewhere around about 200, but you'll be able to see that on the website in the next few days. Just wanted to let you know what's in this podcast. First of all, I've got my favourite blog post of the week, and this time I've read out Sandra's report. And quite a few people try and do a two-day run. We interviewed Caroline last week and talking about her two-day run and how that went. And she had absolutely awful weather on the Sunday, the second day of her run. And Sandra did her two-day run last weekend, the one just gone the weekend before, in that real heat wave. And it was very, very hot. So she had completely different weather to Caroline, particularly on that second day. Anyway, I've read Sandra's report out. It's quite long, so it lasts about 20 minutes or so, and you get a good feel of Sandra's preparation for the race. And then following that, we've got our next interview with Colin Knox. We've been following Colin over the last 12 weeks or so, maybe a bit more, well, probably more than that, actually, got up to 20 podcasts, so it's must be quite a few months now. And this is the last one before the race, and we just get a sense of how Colin feels about the race and what he's looking forward to, what he's scared about, and his goals for the race. So that lasts about 16 minutes, and that's well worth listening to as well. And then the third item we've got for this podcast is one which I hope will be a regular item, and that is from Dave Waterman. I don't know if anyone listens to Marathon Talk. I'm sure a lot of you do, the podcasts. And there's a guy there, Tom Ortonshaw, who does the Tom's Trials. And I've been listening to those, and I really like them. They're quite witty. He has different things in them. And I thought, I know just the person who could do one for us. And Dave Waterman was definitely the man. And so Dave has recorded his first, and he's entitled it Waterman's Pyrannical Ramblings. And so we've got episode one in this podcast, and I hope that's going to be a regular feature. And we'll get Dave's look at ultra running from his perspective. But before we get into any of those, I just wanted to be able to congratulate Debbie Martin-Consani on an absolutely amazing performance over this past weekend. Deb's main target this year was to run the Grand Union Race Canal, which is 145 miles along the Grand Union Canal from Birmingham down to London. And she set off at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning in pretty poor weather, let's be said. It was nice and sunny up in Scotland, but in Birmingham it was raining, and it rained for most of the day. I think they had a bit of a time where it wasn't so bad, but through the night it was really, really difficult. And if you're on Facebook, you've probably been following Deb's progress. Marco was giving regular updates. I rang a few times as well and posted those conversations on the site. And it was absolutely amazing just following Deb. She was, I think, about 12th, 13th or so after the first 10 miles, but gradually just worked her way through the field. She got into first place in the women's race, and then she was targeting the overall win, and she was in third place for a while, and then got into second, and then got into first and won the race. And I'm just looking at Marco's page on Facebook right now, and there are 180 odd comments on that one site, and then there's lots of other pages as well. I haven't got time to read them all out, but Let me just read a few. So she's done it. This is Marco. Smashed the record by 10 minutes. First woman, first finisher. Fabulous performance. And we've got, woohoo, Debbie. Absolute awesome. Amazing. Well done, Deb. So although that doesn't really cut it for that achievement, and well done, Marco, too. Well done, Debs. You are totally awesome. That's amazing. She is amazing. Well done, Team Consani. Congratulations to my mum and dad as well. Madness. What a brutal race. And she won it. Awesome. Fantastic. Congratulations, Debbie. I am all emotional now. Thank you, Marco, for your continuous updates. And it just goes on and on. Lots of people congratulating her, and rightly so. We are told, and I do have inside information for this, but I won't spoil it. There was an incident, and Debs has already put something on her site this morning, or this evening, to that effect. I'll just read Debs's status here, if I can find it. Here we go. Just home from a fantastic weekend at the GUCR, working my way through all the kind comments. Thanks to everyone for the support and encouragement. Marco was keeping me updated throughout the race, and it really helped. If anyone has sent me a text message and thinks I may have slipped into a post-race coma, I had a minor phone incident in the early hours of Sunday morning. I'll save it for the blog post. Huge thanks to Marco, Paul Consani, Gillian Connell. Love you lots. And again, there's lots of comments on that post as well, just congratulating Debs. So I've already asked Debs whether she'd be willing to do another interview, because I think it'd be fascinating just to hear a bit more about that and find out exactly what went on and what it was like to run 145 miles and to win the race. So well done, Debs. All the West Highland Way race family are very proud of you. And we look forward to reading that blog and finding out what happened on those early hours on Sunday morning. And also being able to interview you and get it from your own words as well. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed the podcast. As I say, there's three items: Sandra's blog post, Colin's interview, and Dave Waterman's Pyrannical Ramblings. Stay close to me. Stay close to me. Watch the world come alive tonight. My blog post of the week this week is from Santa Baby Running, which is Sandra's blog, and you can find this at santababyrunning.blogspot.co.uk. There's also a link from the West Highland Way Race website, which is westhighlandwayrace.org. That's right, yep. You can also find a link to all the blogs that are West Highland Way related, or all the ones that I've found anyway. And there's a link there from the westhighlandwayrace.org website. But this is Sandra's report on her double-day training run. And quite a few people, 4 or 5 weeks before the main race, will do a two-day run where they'll cover anything up to 70-odd miles over the 2 days. And Sandra did hers last weekend on the Friday, Saturday, in that real hot weather that we had. And so here's a report from that double day training run. This was written on Monday, the 28th of May, 2012. After my disappointing effort at the fling, I really needed this double day to go well. I tried to get to bed fairly early when I could and wanted to be well rested. Got home on Thursday, packed and waited on Ian finishing work. Once he was home and packed, we headed off to the fabulous Oak Tree Inn. Arrived to find it bathing in glorious sunshine and packed at all the outside tables. We quickly checked in, headed to the bar to fuel up. Normally we don't have starters here, as I usually struggle to eat my main course, but we were both starving, so ordered starters and main courses of haggis, pakora, then pizza. Proper athlete's food. Almost managed to finish, think only had 3 slices left, and unlike last time, had no Andy or George to clear my plate, so I'm afraid they went to waste. Oak Tree was as perfect as ever. Love that place, I do. Ian had a whiskey to finish off the night, and I had more wine. We went outside as it was still a beautiful night, but soon realised that the midges had arrived earlier than usual, and were in full brutal force. I've got many a bite to now prove that fact. So we retired back inside to keep safe from them. Had lovely lying by not getting up till about 8 a.m. then headed off for breakfast. I had one Weetabix followed by scrambled eggs, toast, beans, haggis and a sausage, and of course about 5 cups of tea. I set off about half an hour later into the midst. Ian had said he'd meet me at some point, but I didn't expect to see him till near Benglass Farm, and I was fine with that. Within about a mile, the mist cleared and the sun burst through the clouds, clearing to a beautiful blue sky. This was to stay for the next 2 days, as the temperature climbed upwards as I did. As I got to the beach, I ran down by the water, which was just lovely. I remember running along here during the fling and stopping to walk. I knew at that point I wasn't going to finish the race, if I was walking at that stage. I looked up to see Ian taking pics, which was a nice surprise. I skipped up the beach and gave him a quick kiss before running on. My aim was to go out and enjoy the day, take it back to when I first started running on the West Harlem Way and my first fling, and soak up every bit, and by God I did. I'd never seen so many bluebells in my life. The way is awash with them, and the smell, oh wow, it was just like I was in bluebell heaven, just beautiful. All the bits I struggled on during the fling were a breeze today. My mojo was back, as was my love for the beauty around me, which can be totally forgotten when you're having a rubbish run. It was very hot though, and I was drinking plenty of fluids, so made sure I filled my bottle at Rowadennan. I also stopped here to put compedes on, as my shoes started giving me grief on the downhills towards there. I ran, walked all the hills to Inversnaid and passed lots of happy walkers who were all saying how impressive it was that I was running whilst they struggled to walk in that heat. I was almost out of drinks by Inversnaid and bought 2 deliciously cold cans of Iron Brew and once again filled up my bottle of water. I drank one almost immediately and decanted others in the drinks bottle. About half a mile out of Inversnaid, where the rock climbing starts, I came across a family lifting a bug over a particularly big rock. I had to wait till they'd done that. Climbed over the rock to find a grumpy looking woman, must have been the mum, with her arms folded and a bright red face on that said, "Not moving another step," and 2 kids looking much the same. I slipped past them, wishing them a good day. Onwards and over and up and over and rocks and steps and more rocks and trees, you know the score. Little running to be had on this section, but I didn't care. I put my own advice I gave to Susan for this section when she found her struggle and just looked on it as rest for my legs. Once I got to the clearing, I passed 2 walkers, then a big crowd down by the water who gave me a big cheer. Once I was back under cover and skirting the hillside, I fell down like a sack of tatties. Clearly my legs must have got a bit jellified with the scrambling and were shocked by running again. Luckily, no major damage, just scraped some bruises and a dent to my pride. Onwards I happily went, and as I got about nearer Dario's Hill, Ian appeared. It was good to see him and got a wee bit of company again. We stopped and took pics at Dario's post. I know how emotional this is for Ian, who is very close to Dario. Once we got to Benglass, I popped into the shop and bought ice lollies for us both and more Iron Brew, and again topped my water up. Said my goodbyes to Ian and off I went again. Got a phone call from work here which slowed me down a bit, but once I finished my Calypso, I was off again. Spotted this on a fairly high tree on way to Derrydarrick. Must be Kamikaze sheep up there. There's a picture of some wool on a branch. Ian appeared not far from Derrydarrick and ran back in with me. He spotted I was getting a bit red and so left me there and met me again at the underpass and slapped on more sun cream. He said he was heading straight to Tyndrum to check in, so I probably wouldn't see him till the end. I headed uphill towards Cowpoo Alley. Was amazed to not only see a cow in sight, nor to have to plough through gallons of mud poo at the famous alley. First time for everything. As I approached Crianlarich, I got a bit emotional. I'd struggled a bit between Benglass and here last year during the West Harlem Way race, and I recalled Nick appearing in front of me, and I was instantly lifted. He found out what I needed and ran on to have it ready when I arrived at Bogle Glen, where he and Susan walked with me up the hill towards the picnic table with my requested cup of tea. Love my crew. I stopped at the picnic table and took a couple of pics before heading off, knowing I'd kicked the bum off most of the day. Always seemed to get a take wee bit longer as you approach the road crossing here, as you hear the traffic as you get close, then I have to climb another hill. It wasn't too long before I was indeed crossing the road though and heading towards the wigwams. This made me think of my first fling, where Jules had surprised me by meeting me here and running the last few miles in with me. All these happy memories were just adding to a perfect training run. Came through wigwams knowing I had less than 3 miles left and ran happily on. Didn't see another runner until a mile away from Tyndrum, where I saw three. Two who said hello, girls not together, and one who totally blanked me when I said good afternoon, Chama. Got the gates where Ian was once again waiting and we ran the last wee bit together. I finished day one in 7 hours 54 minutes, 33.37 miles, with a smile on my face in glorious sunshine. Loved it. Day two of Sandra's 2-day training run. This is written Wednesday, 30th of May, 2012. Second day, Tyndrum to Fort William, Although I felt pretty damn good all day this Friday, despite the heat, I was glad to finish and actually tempted to walk back to the river and go and lie down in it. Instead, I went to my room and laid down there as my legs started to stiffen up. Had a cup of tea and 15-minute lie down, then a lovely shower and off to Paddy's for food. My legs were stiff and sore. I said to Ian, I couldn't imagine running 43 miles next day. I know I've done it before, but when the tiredness and pain kicks in, the self-doubt also does. Ian told me the human body was a wonderful thing and I'd feel differently in the morning. After food, we wandered back and sat in the garden and had a drink, but I was fading fast and ended up in bed by 8:30. Think heat of day finally got to me. I know how tired I feel after sunbathing all day. This time I was sunbathing for 8 hours with a wee run thrown in for good measure. I really didn't sleep well at all. I never do after a long run. Maybe the adrenaline is still pumping round my body and confused at sudden rest and it's fighting back. Who knows? Maybe I'm just weird. Okay, yeah, I know I am. 6:30 a.m. and I was up and making tea and making sure Garmin was charged up. Ian was of course right and my legs felt fine. Sun was already bright in the sky, so I expected more of the same, except there would be very little shade in this section. And this time I had company. Ian had mentioned to Paul Houston from my club about my double day, and he mailed and asked if he could join me. I was hesitant for a couple of reasons, one being that Paul is a 2:40 marathon runner for starters. I warned him I'd be slow, be taking lots of walking breaks. I know that I'd be slow. Another reason is that I guess after last year I wanted to mentally get myself through it myself. Regular readers will recall the hell on earth that was last year's double run, well, the second day anyway. I had everything except locusts thrown at me, and I was throwing toys out the pram by the time Ian met me at Llandovera. But I agreed anyway and just hoped poor Paul could put up with my dawdling. He appeared at 8 o'clock to meet me, and before too long we set off into the sunshine sun, creamed up to the max. I love the section from Tyndrum to Bridge of Orkey. I love the landscape ahead and the windy path sneaking round the hillside. I think it's stunning and it's runnable. Well, most of it is actually. I recall loving it during the race last year, knowing I'd be picking up Susan up to buddy me across Rannoch Moor. Little memories of last year's race popped into my head throughout my second day run. Funnily enough, all fond ones. First funny sight was an abandoned pair of sandals. They were pointing towards the hill, and it looked like someone had stepped out of them and decided to take off barefoot up into the hills. Either that, or they were sick of getting stones rattling inside. I think I prefer the version we said, though. We got to Bridge of Orkey to find the crowd on bridge enjoying the glorious weather, and we stopped for a couple of pictures before heading up the hill. Cue first fall of the day. Luckily it was on the hillside into the mud and pain-free, just muddy. Up we went and through the deer gate. I told Paul to remember and have a look back at the view. We can sometimes forget to drink in the surroundings we're in a race, and it would be a shame to miss all those glorious views. As we skirted the hill, Paul remarked that there's a runner coming up behind us. I remarked that she better not be showing up by running up the hills when we were walking, but she wasn't. Still, she did catch us soon enough though, and it only turned out to be Antonia. Quick chat revealed she'd set off from Bridge of Orkey and was heading to Fort William too. I said we were also doing that, but I'd come from Tyndrum and said we were out to take it nice and easy, all about time on feet. Antonia said this suited her fine, so she fell in line with us and the Two Stooges became Three Amigos. We hit the tarmac at the bottom, and it was here I realised I'd forgotten to fill my water bottle. Fail. I had plenty of juice with me, but no water, so popped into Inveroran Hotel, and they kindly agreed to fill it for me. Onwards towards Rannoch Moor, the dreaded Rannoch Moor. As if it wasn't hot enough without being there in that godforsaken place. Still, it meant I got to show Antonia and Paul my future house. They were quite impressed, especially when they found out it also had servant quarters. It was past the gates that me and Susan had spotted a herd of deer last month when we did this route. I guess they were staying well in the shade today. Lucky them. We had the benefit of the trees for the first mile or so. Then, of course, it opened up and its blistering heat hit time. It wasn't too long before Ian joined us, which surprised me somewhat. I hadn't expected him to see him till at least halfway, but he'd motored, on his feet that is, across from Glencoe. So now Three Amigos became Four Musketeers, or something. Rannoch Moor actually passed quite quickly, with lots of us around and a fair bit of chat to place. But I was glad to see the glorious sight of King's House as we skirted the corner. Ian had run on ahead and was driving down to King's House so we could restock. Neither Antonia or Paul had been on this part of the route, so letting them know what lay ahead was also taking my mind off things too. We got to King's House and Ian refilled our bottles and sun creamed me up. Antonia and I nipped into the loos, then ran on, not realising Paul was waiting at the car for us. Oops. Quick call to Ian and he was soon with us again, and we headed towards the Devil's Staircase, spotting this deer just past King's House. Paul had ran from the bottom of the Devil, but Antonia was new to it. There were tons of cars parked at the bottom as usual, and lots in car park opposite, so we expected to see a fair amount of walkers, but actually only passed one couple. In fact, we hardly saw a soul the entire day, unless we got near a town. I think the heat was beating people to retreat. I certainly got a few fair comments from walkers the previous day, saying they were struggling in that heat, never mind run. I think we made the top in fairly good time and got a wee breeze the higher up, which was very welcome. We stopped for a drink and a few pictures at the top before heading down the never-ending descent to the fabled town of Kinlochleven. I'd warned Antonia that the town keeps popping up, then disappearing, then told her a few tales of when I supported Jen the first year, and I did this in the dark with two head torches between three of us, and it was my first time ever wearing a head torch. Oh, how we learned that year. Ian met us in Kinlochleven, and we got some lovely cold cans juice in the pub. Barmaid kept asking, diet or normal? Was she trying to tell us something? I said, you can tell we're athletes. We're all going for the full sugar ones. Ian said goodbye. He didn't envy us running in this heat, as he'd really felt it when he was running. I'm fairly lucky that it doesn't bother me too much. I think only difference is I drink much more than normal. We said our goodbyes to Ian and we headed off to the rock face climb out of there. As we wandered along the road, drinking our cans, we bumped into Lorna and David coming in the opposite direction. Quick chat to find out their plans, and I told them Ian was down the road. So we set off again with a warning. We only had cover for a mile or so, then it was brutal. We cherished every slight breeze we got, and I kept jumping in streams when I saw them, urging P and A to do so too. Antonia was very nervous, worrying she'd get blisters. P was throwing his cap in everyone and chucking it on his head and telling us stories about his crazies ultra runs in the Arizona desert. This weather was perfect for him. Too cool, perhaps. Antonia was soon joining Paul with the hat thing, and it wasn't too long before she was also jumping in the streams. The heat was really starting to get to us all, I think. Both A and P were dubious about filling their water bottles from a stream until I jumped down a bridge and filled mine, and gurgling the cold, wonderful, clear and beautiful water down like it was the best champagne ever. They tentatively started taking sips from their hands before realising it wasn't actually going to kill them. Actually, it was after this that we all got a new lease of life. And after a bit of a lull and a bit of quietness, we were suddenly on the move again, running the uphills and fighting over every bit of water we spotted running through it, splashing like kids do and laughing our heads off. It was bloody great. After a long slug up there, we all had a new lease of life. Onwards we went, and about 2 miles out of Llandovera, disaster struck. The new lease of life perhaps left us a bit reckless. We'd all nearly taken tumbles, and I was surprised none of us had fallen. Suddenly, I was flying through the air and landed with an almighty thud. I lay there groaning and was picked up by AMP, and I tried to put my foot down, but the pain shooting from the knee. Antonia said she got a slow motion of it and could do nothing but watch me fly through the air. I hobbled on a bit, thinking it would ease like it did the first day. It didn't. It hurt to walk, and the minute we got to downhill, it hurt a lot. This didn't bear well for the stupid 3-mile downhill to Fort William, and I made the decision to stop at Llandovera. I tried to persuade Paul and Antonia to go on ahead and leave me to walk in, and they would let Ian know I was on the way, but they wouldn't leave me, bless them. Paul decided to stop here too, as he'd been out for time on feet, and we'd had around eight hours by then, so he was happy with that. I hobbled into Llandovera, and I was relieved to see Ian, and a bit panicked not to see the car. I thought, oh no, what's if he decided to run here? I'd have been stranded. It wasn't though. Car was there, of course. We got in the car, and the minute I sat down, the pain really hit quite badly. We set off the windy road to Llandovera and stopped at the vantage point over Fort William to look at the view. Getting out of the car was a bit of an issue, and I started to feel sick and dizzy and thought I was going to throw up. I kept heaving, thinking I was going to be sick, but nothing came up. Could be the fact that I'd actually eaten nothing since I'd had my bowl of porridge that morning, then I'd taken some painkillers as soon as I stopped. Ian said to me in the car that I'd have to rethink my strategy as I kept falling. How do you rethink a strategy to not fall, I wondered. I didn't trip or fall once during the Thai West Highland Way last year, yet I still ended up with broken ankles. I fell 3 times over 2 days. Twice I picked myself up and got on with it. Third time unlucky, and I didn't want to jeopardise my race by buggering my knee going down that downhill. And I'm glad I did. I did the Devil Route only recently with Susan. It's not like I'd not done that section many times. I did 69 plus miles over 2 days in apparently the hottest part of UK, mental. Took us 8 hours 40 minutes, the last 2 miles being very slow to me hobbling along, 35.90 miles. I'm ready to taper now. I need to properly rest in the lead up to this and won't make the same mistakes I did in the lead up to Fling. I'm primed and ready, as is my crew. My knee was agony on Saturday night and I barely slept, as I really hurt whenever I turned over. But I was off Monday, slept for 13 hours and rested lots, so I'm getting better every day. Huge thanks to Paul and Antonia for the company and for the fun we had in jumping in rivers. Let's do it again sometime. Ian was as ever superb support, and I really couldn't do this without him. Ready now, and well, once I've rested for 3 weeks, I will be. Close to me. Tonight this could be the greatest night of our lives. Let's make a new start. The future is ours to find. Can you see? Well, here we are again with Colin, doing our regular little updates on Colin's training as he prepares for his first West Highland Way race. So, Colin, as we speak, it's Wednesday the 30th of May. The race is just over 3 weeks away. And so, first of all, just how do you feel about the race being this close?
It's a mixture of excitement, I think. And I'd be a bit intimidated as well. It's the last couple of weeks seem to have snuck up very quickly. I think doing some of these races beforehand as well, they've kind of taken priority for the last couple of weeks. And then after the race is out the way, you suddenly realise, I've only got so many weeks left. So yeah, it's 3 weeks away. There's some planning I've still to do, some fine-tuning as regards to logistics and the support team stuff, but running stuff's going well. I don't have any worries with that. It's just nerves now, I think. I'm going to be lining up shortly. I don't know what I'm going to expect on the day. I'm not going to worry about it any more than I need to, because there's nothing I can do about the nerves. They're going to be there. But no, I'm keyed up for it. I've been out shopping, getting some new gear, and going to Asda and getting all the supplies in. But no, I'm really up for this. I'm on a high this now. The last couple of runs I've been doing, so I'm really keyed up for it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Good. I know the last time we spoke, you were getting ready to do the Catherine Trail, and that was going to be your final big run before the race. So maybe tell us a bit about that, and maybe how your training's gone either side of that as well.
Yeah, since the last time we spoke, it's actually done the fling as well. It was first, and then I had a hill race as well over in Stirling, and then the Catherine. All three races went better than I thought that they were going to go. I think in the back of your mind, you're worried about pushing too hard with a big one coming up. But the fling, got a PB, same with the Catarán, and the Dumyat Hill Race was my second hill race, and I loved every minute of that. Mm. And it was good to do these races to sort out the pacing problem that I've had. It's just really to try and push myself, prepare mentally as well, having these two big long races so close together. Mm. Try and tie up any loose ends as well. Try out nutrition problems as well. Try out some new things with that. The Catarán was a really good race last year for me, and I didn't want to push too hard this close to the West Highland Way race. But on the day, I felt that good. You know, I thought I'm going to try and go for a PB as well, which I got. It's a fantastic race. I did some pacing things with an app in my phone, which kind of records my pacing. So I've managed to hopefully fine tune the pacing down to what I want to try and do for the West Highland Way race. didn't go off too quick, which is good, which I've got a habit of doing. Tried to maintain the pace all the way through the race, and it seems to have worked out. As I say, the last three races have gone fantastic, and I feel as if I'm on a high, and I'm hoping that I can maintain that up until the race. But no, things going really well. Training wise, I had planned to do a lot of training up on the upper half of the West Highland Way route, but it's trying to get times now to head up there and do these longer runs has proven difficult. So I've been kind of mixing and matching my training runs locally up in the Braes, over in the Kilpatricks. Today was a way up, running around Loch Catterton as well, which is a good wee run. But no, I don't want to do too much between now and then, but just to keep ticking over and hopefully stay injury-free as well.
Well, I must say, Colin, from just our chats over these podcasts, I think you've had a really sensible approach. You know, you've built it up slowly, you've done the runs. I wondered whether doing the catering as well as the fling, but I think the way you approached it was right. You know, you didn't go hammering out, but the fact that you could do a PB without pushing it is actually a really good sign that you're in good shape. Yeah. So the race is just over 3 weeks away. We did a little bit on the podcast last week. Neil and myself talked a bit about tapering and how to taper, and maybe some of the thoughts that we've done. So what are your feelings at this stage? I know you've tapered for 50-mile races, which I think is different. What are your thoughts about how are you going to go from now to the race in regard to tapering down and just trying to rest as well as run?
Yeah, tapering for the 50-mile races has always been quite easy. But this is a whole new thing. It's practically double the distance, really, most of the events I've been doing. So I wasn't quite sure how to approach it. The plan had been, after the Catarán, was just to do a couple of sort of maybe runs about 20 miles in the next couple of weeks, and then come 2 weeks beforehand, start taking it easy then. I had initially planned to do the Sky Half as my last sort of hard going race, but I'm not going to knock that in the head now. Plus the drive up there is a wee bit of a hassle as well. So I'm going to stick to my local runs, do some hill training as well, get the legs strengthened up, just take it nice and easy. Tapering, I don't think Andy's a fan of tapering. As I say, it's the temptation to go out there and run. It's going to be there, but I have to hold myself back. I mean, I'm never going to be a fast runner, but to sit there one day bored, I need to run. But to know you can't go out there and run that far in case you tire yourself out or injure yourself so close to the race. But a few miles every day between now and then, you know, they'll keep me ticking over. Yeah. And hopefully it'll keep me prepared for the race.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I think sometimes it's just maybe not doing as many and doing it easier, you know. But it's funny, I think some people, I've known in the past, I didn't mention this last week, some people just don't run at all for 2 or 3 weeks. I'd find that really hard. But I know that works for some people, and I think you've got to try and, you know, work out what works for you. We all know that it's not just the running you need to prepare, and I know you're someone who's well advanced. I've seen on Facebook pictures already of all your food that's all lined up, ready to go. So you've obviously got on top of that. What about the logistics support-wise? Have you got two teams, one team? How's it going to work out, people supporting you in the race?
At the moment, it's one team. It's going to be the lower half. My parents are going to do majority of it. I've got Jim, who I go hill walking with. No doubt people have seen his picture on Facebook, the numerous photographs I put on, but he's going to be helping me. He said he would try and help out at Balmaha, but I'll wait and see about that. But he's going to be my kind of runner. He'll be up Fort William that night anyway, so he'll be able to run back if I need help. Support wise, my parents are more than willing to jump in and help out. I don't know whether they realise exactly what they're landing themselves in for here, but they've always been at the longer events. They'll drive up and stay the weekend. I mean, they were up at the Cataran there. I've never asked them to help out, but they always appear up because they're really keen in doing that, which is brilliant. So they're enthusiastic. I've had a couple of wee chats about what I'm planning to do, but I'll probably have one final big meeting just to talk about tactics and then sort of time targets. Excuse me. I'm going to have for the race. I'll see how they go. I don't want them hanging about all night. So, you know, I'm going to a wee rest between these big long runs that I'm going to have. There'll be spells up Loch Lomond side, you know, where I'm maybe going to be out of touch for 5-6 hours. So they'll be going to have a wee sleep somewhere. I'm maybe getting accommodation somewhere, but I'll sort out the logistics of that over this week. But support teams, I know in the past have been hard pushed, you know, underappreciated, this sort of thing. So, I mean, I appreciate any help I can get off them. So hopefully it'll be easy on them.
Good. I think the more prepared you are, it's easier for the team as well. If you've got no idea where you're going to be when, it's the circumstances you mightn't get there. But if you've got a basic plan, and maybe a sort of a plan which this is what I hope to be, but I might be half an hour either side of that, and it gives them some idea, doesn't it? You talked there a little bit about your goals and the thought of what you're aiming for. Are you willing to share with us and the podcast what your plans are and what your maybe even bronze, silver, gold type goals?
Yeah, I've done that in the past with some of the runs. It was after I read one of your blogs about the different sort of targets you had, your gold medal, your bronze medal, and so on. And I've done that with a few races in the past. And I've done that with the last couple of races, the Fling and the Cataran, and I've been nearly on target. This is a wee bit different, but it's been a longer race. But ideally, I think everybody just says they want to finish it, which is, that's the ultimate goal, is to finish the race within the time limit. But I've got a target. I want to try and get to as close to about 28 hours as I can, and I reckon I'm capable of doing that. I don't want to be, you know, too outrageous, you know, go mental and say I'll do it in 24. I don't think I can do it that quick. I'm only really basing my targets on the Fling and the Divil. I've done the Divil once and done the Fling 4 times now. Yeah, so I know roughly what I can do these distances in. And adjusted that purely for the accumulation of mileage over the day. So my gold would probably be between 27 and 28, and then it would go up an hour for each of them. If I could get below 27 hours, I'd be the happiest man in the world. I really would be, but I'm trying to be realistic. As the day goes on, though, I'll have checkpoint targets and I'll see how I'm doing. And I can always adjust that. I'll have to adjust it probably anyway for my team to make sure they're in the right place at the right time. I've heard of support teams in the past have turned up after the runner's actually been through a checkpoint, which I don't want that to happen. But we'll see what happens during the day. Just to finish, I'd be delighted just to get the goblet. But 28 hours is the kind of realistic target I'm going to go for. But being a first time West Highland Way race for me as well, I don't have anything previously to base it on. My longest run has been 56 miles, so anything after that is, I'm into kind of new territory. So I'm just kind of guesswork, and I'll see how I get on in the day.
So your fling time, what was that this year?
It was just, saying it was 12 hours 18, I think it was.
Yeah, 12, 18. So I remember once Thomas and myself doing some sort of looking at the times that people did on the fling and then the full race. Yeah. And we, some people say just double it, but we think it's a bit more than that. I think it's 2.2 or something. Yeah, right. So if you talk about, you know, say 12 and a half even, yeah, you're talking about 25, mm-hmm, and then add on another hour or two. Yeah. You know, I think 27, between 27, 28. You know, it all depends on the day, but I think that will be a challenging, realistic goal, though. And we wish you well. We hope that goes well. Yeah. Just got two last questions. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to most about the race? I know this has been a goal of yours for at least the last year, maybe even longer. So now it's just 3 weeks ago. What are you looking forward to most about actually taking part in the race?
Well, it's different things. I think it's just the people, the main thing. You know, the people that I've met over the last couple of years doing these races. Some of them are lunatics. They're a good crowd. I think running with people like that will get me to the end. I think just having the target, having the goblet in the back of my mind, that's the thing I want to get. Mm. And I've seen people reacting in the past to getting the goblet, and I want that goblet.
Yeah.
I just think the running. I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to let people bash on ahead of me. I'm just going to get into my own stride, enjoy the day, because it is a fantastic route. Mm. I think just enjoying the company of the other people as well who are doing it for the first time. Mm. You know, whether I run alongside the same people all day or not, I'm not really bothered, but it's happening, talking to people along the day, enjoying the company. But I'm just going to soak it up. Mm. It's going to be an experience. It's, people have talked about it as life-changing, and, you know, it's the after they do it, running's never the same. It's, they want to do it again. Mm. We'll see how I feel after I finish as well, if I want to do it again, but... No, I'm going to enjoy the day. Take it as it comes. I'm not going to get stressed out and worried. If I have to walk, I'll walk. You know, I'm just going to look after myself and just have a great time.
Excellent. Oh, that sounds a great philosophy, great mindset. And I'd be very, very surprised if this is the only one you do. Yeah. I think the first time I did it, I thought I'll just do it once. But you do it once, and you think, oh, I could go quicker than that, and you suddenly find you've done five, and you know, you keep going. So that's what you're looking forward to. What scares you about the race this close? As again, it's been on your mind for so long. What's on the more negative side? Maybe the scary bit.
I think the one that comes to mind right away is getting injured between now and the start. Mm. That's what's scaring me the now, because everything I do is based around this one event. You know, and I'd hate for all the hard work to suddenly at the last minute hurt myself and then I can't win, because I know there's quite a few people already have had to withdraw, and I'm gutted for them, but to be in that position as well, I can't imagine having put all this work in to not do it. I think on the night as well, as having, if I had to withdraw, that's the main fear, is not being able to continue. I'm hoping it won't happen. I'm hoping I've got everything in place, and if I'm careful, especially the nighttime sections as well. I mean, I'll be out there till the second night, definitely, anyway. I mean, I'll be finishing the early hours, so I'm going to be coming up over the Larrigmore in the dark, which I've never run in the dark before. I've run the bottom sections at nighttime, but I've never run that section, so I think the fear there is falling over and hurting myself and having to pack it in, which I know I would regret that. I've done that before with the fling, I regretted it, and I don't want to do that with this race. If I get to kind of leave and I'm within the time limit, if I have to walk in, I'll walk in. I'm determined to get there. I'm hoping I've learned enough over the last couple of months from people that will get me through the bad times. I don't want to get into a position where I'm getting so low that I talk myself out of it. My brain tells my body, just give it in. I'm determined to finish, standing up, whether it be 1 second under the time limit, I'll be there. I try and put the fears out of my mind, but they're always going to be there. But I'm at such a high this now, you know, I don't think they'll worry me too much.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. And I've really enjoyed it. It's been fun to sort of just to see how it's been going every few weeks. And we'll get you back after the race as well. And you can give us a little sort of report of how it went. But we'd like to wish you all the best, Colin. I hope it goes really well. And I think you're going to do really, really well. You've prepared well. You've got a great attitude. And I think you're going to love it. Well done.
Thank you.
Following my reading of a blog post for the West Island Way Race podcast programme, John Kynaston asked me to do a regular stint on the podcasts. To begin with, I was flattered. After all, who wouldn't want to listen to the secrets behind my ultra-running success, my detailed nutritional advice, and my recommendations for long-lasting relationships? Then I thought, that means I'm not going to be able to Anyway, I decided to have a good listen to my previous podcast contribution to discover exactly what it was that entertained Mr. Kynaston so, and what he thought I had to say that would be of benefit to the great and the good of the Scottish ultra running community. As I listened to a tattooed Cockney speaking to me from iTunes, it came to me. As the clipped vowels and dropped H's echoed off the walls, it became apparent. John's simply using me to demonstrate that the West Island Way Race is an equal opportunities organisation that welcomes all, even idiotic Londoners. And so here you have it. Waterman's piratical ramblings, a regular wittering from a minority representative. And this is episode one. I saw a Facebook comment from the race director Ian Beattie a few days ago. It indicated that there had been a few dropouts on the race this year. Dropping like flies was the phrase used, although most of the flies in my neck of the woods seemed to defy any and every attempt to bring about their demise. Excellent, thought I. Every cloud has a silver lining and all that. Ian might even give me a last minute place. I've done a little bit of training after all. But before placing the call to the race director, I decided that I'd accompany my pal and former West Island Way Race finisher, Martin Hooper the Paratrooper, on his last long training run before the race. Only a slack 20 miler along the North Downs, and this would prove that my ambitions really are commensurate with my abilities. So I met the airborne one in a car park near Dorking, and we stepped out for another car park 10 miles away. The plan was to get out, turn around and run back. The first 2 miles of this run are all uphill. Hooper and I chatted freely, for about 5 minutes, before me gasping for air prevented anything other than hand signals and grimaced facial expressions. I attempted to employ a tactic that I'd learned many years ago in the army. It involves breathing out of your rectum, but this failed too. Hooper bounded along like a gazelle. Okay, admittedly a 15-stone gazelle, that lost its Bambi-like prettiness many years ago and replaced it with the bald, scarred countenance of someone that you're glad you don't live next door to. He tripped along the trail effortlessly, over rocks and roots, while I staggered on behind like a drunk trying to make the off-license before closing time. We reached the 10-mile point and the chance of making a start line of the West Island Way race seemed to be slipping from my grasp like a football in the hands of an English goalkeeper. Hooper scoffed a pork pie and shot off for the next 10 miles back in the direction we'd come. I followed on behind, believing a second wind would come and save me. Then I realised that I hadn't actually experienced the first. Despite semi-hatching a plan to feint a fall and an inability to walk, I managed to hang on till the end. The reason my plan failed to reach fruition was a concern that Hooper might have decided that a shallow grave was preferable to him carrying me on his back. and I think you might have seen the gossamer thin depth of my plan when I temporarily achieved full leg function any time we approached an area of habitation and the likelihood that someone might see me on his back. Anyway, what have I learned from accompanying Hooper on his run? 1. Hooper is in a good place physically for this year's race. 2. Clearly, I'm not. 3. If nothing else, making an idiot of yourself on a 20-miler provides material for a new podcast series, so stay tuned for more insightful activities from Waterman's Piratical Ramblings that will aid you in making informed decisions in your ultra running career, which is basically to do everything differently from me. Laters.
The greatest day of our lives. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We just probably got two more before the actual West Harlem Way race for 2012. And I'll see what I can put together for those last two before the race itself. So as I say, all those who are training for the race, are getting ready, I hope you're tapering well and you're keeping focused, and make sure you get to that start line as fit and as healthy as you can. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.